When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everybody, I'm Cess Busby, editor of Flying Solo. Welcome to our weekly podcast where we step inside the minds and lives of soloists and small business owners. Today's guest is Olivia Carr. Olivia's story is a real rags-to-riches tale. Dropping out of school as a teenager, pregnant by 19, and 100K in debt by her 20s, Olivia spent over a decade in financial hardship before turning her life around. Well, today she runs a multi-million dollar global empire. Her brand, Silk, counts the Kardashians and Selena Gomez amongst its happy clients, and she's passionate about helping other women in business too. She joins us to share her entrepreneurial journey and give us the lowdown on her new enterprise, the Self-Made Academy. Olivia, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
It's an absolute pleasure. I'm really looking forward to our chat.
Great, great. So for our listeners, I wouldn't mind getting into a little bit about your journey as an entrepreneur. I mean, you came from some pretty challenging circumstances in your early years, but you've become a very successful business owner with Silk. And can you tell us what were the circumstances that led to you starting your business?
Yeah, so it's actually the second business I've had. My first business was when I was 24 and pregnant with my second child. I thought I would, you know, I think a lot of women when they're pregnant have, you know, time to think about what it is that they want to do in life. And I thought that that would be a great time to launch my first business. So I had a very successful business for about 4 years in my 20s called Shows for Kids. It was a touring educational business where we used to go around to all the schools in Australia and entertain children around really important issues like cyberbullying, healthy eating and exercise. And it was during that business that I actually won the Young Entrepreneur of the Year in, I think, like 2007, gosh, a long time ago. At the best startup. So that for me was probably my first, I guess, experience of what it's like to be an entrepreneur. I did everything on my own. I wrote all the shows. I did all the choreography. I designed all the, you know, the costumes. And needless to say, I suffered burnout. So after 4.5 years, I actually walked away from that business. I didn't know anything about selling. I didn't know anything about franchising. I literally was so burnt out, I walked away. Which I actually think was a blessing because it made me realize that there's so many other aspects to running a business that you need to be aware of that I just had no experience in. So I did a few things from there. I went and worked in some corporate roles and then I went and worked in for the National Breast Cancer Foundation, which is where my love for kind of doing good stems from. And then I think once you've had a business once or once you've worked for yourself, it's very hard and challenging to kind of become an employee again. So after about, 6 or 7 years, I knew it was time. I had just finished a role as a general manager at Pacific Brands, so Bonds, Sheridan and Champion and that group. And I had dabbled a little bit in e-commerce when I was there and I was like, oh, this is an interesting kind of space to be in. And that was about 10 years ago now. And I was like, that's something that kind of excites me. It was very new at the time. Not a lot of big brands were doing much in the e-com space. And so I decided that maybe it was time to kind of launch my own business again. And yeah, I, you know, it's a little bit to how I ended up doing Silk pillowcases. But essentially, I always knew that, you know, it was just a matter of time before I would do my own thing. And here we are 8 years later.
And how did you come to the idea of Silk pillowcases?
Yeah, it's like it's such a simple story. It's nothing too like extravagant. I have always slept on Silk. My hairdresser, like many women, get recommended by their hairdressers because I, you know, I get a regular blow dry and I like to get as many days out of it. definitely helps with that. And I think I'd had this one for gosh about 10 years, and I was traveling with my children in the US. Sort of thinking about it was at that stage in 2015 where I was like, well, what will I do next? What is that next venture going to look like? And the first night, my white silk pillowcase got removed the next morning with the housekeeping. Never to be seen again. And I got back home from that trip and I was Googling and I was like, oh, it's so annoying that I have to pay $100 to replace this thing, because they've always been, you know, a similar price because silk's, you know, an expensive fabric. And I was like, oh, I just really like a zip. Like, I just want a zipper because it falls off my pillow. And there just wasn't one globally. And it was literally that genuinely was the light bulb moment. I was like, oh, you know, I wonder if I could make one. And then if I could make it, would other people want it? 3 days later, I flew to China to learn everything about silk. And then I think everyone thought I was absolutely crazy just launching such a niche product into the market. But yeah, it worked. And I think it's a lot to do with the PR stuff that I'm sure we're going to get into today. But yeah, I gave myself 6 months, but that was essentially, it came because I lost it and I wanted an improved version, so I created it.
You have quite an interesting story about turning up at Kris Jenner's doorstep, is that right?
Yeah, so that was part of my, I guess, my master PR plan. So for those listeners that watch the show, they'll probably be aware that the girls, including the grandma actually, have always slept on silk pillowcases, again, for similar reasons than I have. So I knew that they loved the product, and I knew that the ones that they were using at the time they looked to be handmade, to be honest, like someone had obviously made them for them. Because, you know, if you go back 8 years ago, there really weren't many silk pillowcases on the market. It's probably close to 300 brands today. And I was like, you know what, if I can make something that I'm proud of, I'm pretty sure they're going to love it too. So I had this plan in my mind that I would just turn up on the doorstep and hand deliver them. And that is basically what I did.
How'd you get through those gates?
I know. It's such a crazy story, and it's, you know, I think it's important to share it because even though I've shared this story so many times, there's so many people that it's the first time they've heard it. But look, I don't want to say luck, but for me, I didn't even know that gated communities existed. I genuinely thought I was turning up to a work, a work address, because I had Kris Jenner's work address. I didn't realize that at the time she was working from her residence. So of course, when I get off the plane and I hire the car and I turn up to the address, I realize it's a gated community, of which I've never experienced, because coming from, you know, Melbourne, we just don't have gated communities. And at that point I was like, oh God, you know, how is this going to work? And sure enough, I approached the gate and told them that I was there to see Jenner Communications. They took my ID and they let me through. When I got to the driveway though, there was a do not cross rope because she was renovating her driveway. And at that point there were so many cameras, and, you know, as I pull up, there's two matching Rolls Royces. One was grey and one was black, which I later Googled was Kim and Kanye's matching Rolls Royces because they were living there. the whole experience was incredibly overwhelming. It happened really quickly. But the adrenaline had definitely taken over my sane logic mind, because, you know, I really shouldn't have been there. And then I'm looking at this thing saying do not cross, and I'm like, oh, I'm here now, I've come all this way, what do I do? And a UPS truck turned up at that exact moment to hand deliver some packages to the property, and he just walked over the rope, and I was like, right. So I jumped out of the car, I had my box and a handwritten letter that I'd written to Kris, explaining my life, my story, my mission, and the whole lot. I put my box down and I could hear noises and voices inside. And then at that point I was like, no, just get out of here. You absolutely have to get out of here. And I left. And then, yeah, 4 months later we got an email from Kim's PA, and that's kind of essentially where we started working with them. We're still blessed to be able to say that we still have relationships with the family today. It was only a few weeks ago that Kris wanted some custom PJs for her and her 6 girlfriends. So it's been a 6 or 7 year relationship now that started with one very crazy idea that wasn't very well thought through, because I think if anyone, you know, you couldn't do it today because obviously security's definitely, you know, a lot different than it was, you know, even though they were very famous 8 years ago, I think they've really blown up since. So I don't think that would work. I don't condone trespassing, but I genuinely didn't know. So I'm always a bit awkward talking about it because I'm like, oh, I'm definitely not condoning people, you know, talking their way through gated communities, but that is the story and I have to own it. So yeah.
And it worked out well for you in the end. So given that that was such an unpredictable outcome, were there ever any thoughts that maybe, you know, this is a crazy idea, it might not work and I'm putting everything on the line?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, one of the constant themes that I bring into the business, I mean, even this morning I've been going through this process with my new book, is how can I make it fun? Like everything I do when it comes down to PR or marketing or trying to make impact with the brand, it's like, how can I make this interaction with, I don't know, in this case, Kris Jenner, or it could be with anyone, how can I make it fun for them? How can I make it fun for me? And I don't really try and put too much, I guess, thinking around it, not too much strategic thinking, because honestly, I think if I, like I joke then that if you sort of stopped and worked your way through it, you would never do that idea. And so for me, would it have mattered if that didn't pay off? Truthfully, probably not, because I've done so many other things that are similar to that. That not every idea that you have is going to work, but I think if you have fun along the way, like it doesn't really matter, because it's like, wow, I still tried that crazy thing. I still, you know, I remember, gosh, I think it was the Ariana Grande concert that, you know, we turned up to her hotel in Melbourne when she was there, and, you know, we did some crazy PR stuff in that hotel, and we've done stuff for Kylie and Kendall when they were like, I don't know, it's just doing enough things regularly and some of them will drop. So that one, it was amazing because it did work. The story probably would have been very different if it didn't work, but it did, so it's hard to kind of look back on that now. But I think if that one didn't work, I would have tried something else.
How important have those kind of celebrity endorsements been to the brand's growth?
Yeah, huge. I think, you know, whilst I talk about this in the book as well, I'm not a huge believer in all the Daily Mail articles around, you know, this brand was seen on this celebrity and sold out, you know, 1,000 pairs of. I don't necessarily buy into that, because I think that when you do things with celebrities, it's not always about selling out of your product. It's about, I guess, getting a really, well, one, it's about relationships if you keep and nurture them ongoing, but the actual moment that you get, it's about what you do with that moment. And for us, because we've had such amazing cut through with so many celebrities, you know, things like hotel collaborations, it makes it so much easier to get in the door to some of the most prestigious hotels around the world because we have celebrities wearing our product and wanting to wear our product that stay in their hotel. So I think it's what you do with that moment that really matters. And if people approach any sort of gifting as, I just want them to put my product online so that I sell out, it's not really how it works. Mm. Yeah.
Did you sell out though, out of curiosity?
Well, back in the day when we were early, I could say that we would have sold out. So we went from me working at home to then moving into an office of 9 people in Chadston. But also I want to kind of put a caveat to that, you know, eight or 7 or 8 years ago, selling out for us, the quantities would have been so small. So it's you have to put a correct lens on it. I mean, someone can say they sold out if they only have 5 items of something. Yeah. So if I think back, you know, I know what we were buying back in those days. And yeah, okay, cool. We would have sold out, especially in our marble one, time and time again, but we were probably only ordering 300 at a time each time back then. So, which is still amazing. But is it like a Nike selling out of, you know, 1 million SKUs of something? It's not quite the same. So it's all relative. And I try and keep things very down to earth, because I think one of the things that I don't like as a founder is I don't necessarily like seeing things overly hyped without. I think it's good to have hype, but it's also good to back that up and help other founders with a bit of the truth telling behind the scenes.
Mm. So how have you managed scaling the brand? You mentioned, you know, going from working at home to then moving into your own space.
Yeah, so I think, look, some of those big things. So, yes, we had that one moment, but I think where the growth for the brand really started early on was we focused heavily on PR, a huge amount of gifting, a huge amount of events, particularly in the beginning, like the first 3 years, everything we did was in America. Most of the brands that we worked with back in the day would have thought we were an American brand because, I guess, coming from a global global brand before starting my own, I just saw how much work it takes. You know, I worked for, say, Bonds, and they're back in the day, I think they were more than 100 years old, or they're about to be 100 years old. and they hadn't yet tapped into the global market. And I just noticed how hard it was for them to try and break into America, even though I think the average Australian when I was there has 7 pieces of Bonds, you know, so they are a, you know, a brand that is highly recognized in Australia, and yet was so challenging for them to try and initially get cut through. And I just remember thinking, wow, I think I need to do things differently. I think I need to try and get cut through in America from day one, because it takes the same amount to build your brand there as it would in Australia. So I think that paid off, truthfully, for us. I know because I work with a lot of e-commerce brands now that, you know, maybe they've been around for 3 or 4 years and they're now trying to get into other markets. And whilst it's good, you know, test your product locally, it then kind of doubles the work when you've then got to try and do it all again. So my advice there would be, if you are starting a brand or if you're small enough still, try and grow it all. And not all, you can't do it all, but try and grow your biggest markets at the same time, because, and I think for us, like, the biggest growth has come from some of our biggest hotel collections and collaborations. It's, you know, we've just partnered with a company called The Hotel Co., which is led by my old partner at the Beverly Hills Hotel, where we're now just launching into hotels around the world. So I think, and all of that, again, those relationships really did stem from getting that credibility early on with some influential people in the world. So I will say that you don't need a huge marketing budget to do any of this. We've not ever paid an influencer or anyone to endorse our products. I think where we've got the biggest cut through from that is making the experience really amazing and impactful for the individual. So it's not always about just sending your product. There's so many times where we don't send our product at all. I mean, I remember one really cool story. Kim, this is probably back in 2018-ish, Kim Kardashian is obsessed with a particular flavor of Skittles. Like, she just loves Nerds. And so as soon as I heard her say that on her Instagram, I got onto Amazon in the US and I was like, I need to find the world's largest box of Nerds in that flavor. And I got them shipped to her. And of course, the next day she posts it and she calls us out and she says, thank you. It has nothing to do with silk pillowcases, but it has everything to do with the relationship and acknowledging that we get her. We, you know, that's something that we knew she'd love. And of course that she did, because she shared it. And it's just having those moments with them. You know, you're dealing with people who have access to everything in the world. How can you give them that 1 second of joy and pleasure? And that's where I would suggest you spend a lot of creative thinking time, is in creating those memorable moments for people.
Do you workshop your ideas, or is a lot of stuff like these creative ideas just coming straight out of your head?
Yeah, they just come – that's the tricky part. They do come straight out of my head. And I do a lot of, I do a lot of mentoring with other brands, and I have a whole six-hour session just designed on creative thinking. So it's not necessarily to mentor them on how to creatively think, but it allows me to get into their business, to get into their psyche, literally sit with me for 6 hours, and I will just fly off a whole lot of ideas. I had one recently for TLC for Kids, which is a charity that's trying to launch this amazing kind of app at the moment, and they need it in the hands of 5 million Australians as quick as possible. And we got on a Zoom call and I was like, well, that's easy. And he's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, you just need to do something really cool and do a partnership with a toilet paper brand. Every household needs toilet paper, and I guarantee you're going to get, you know, 5 million eyeballs on the toilet paper. Do something really interactive on the toilet paper. And like that, like, I can't. And they love the idea, and I think they're going with it. But it's like, I can't necessarily explain how another brand can come up with these ideas, other than I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, if I could teach them how to do anything, it's, you have to think bigger than anyone else is willing to think. And go bigger. Like, jumping on a plane and hand delivering to Kris Jenner was probably the biggest move I could do. And sure, to your question before, if that didn't land, something still would have landed, maybe just not as high as I initially thought, but something probably still would have landed from that, which is still probably going to be further than I would have got if I, you know, sat down and we brainstormed, you know, some ideas. Sometimes I think you've just got to be brave, go big, and if you fall short, it's still going to be bigger than you probably would have originally went.
I think that's really great advice, but a lot of people are pretty risk averse, so how would you tell them to overcome that? And I think sometimes that's also kind of tied up with imposter syndrome as well, you know, like maybe they don't think they're good enough or what they're doing is good enough. So then why will their big idea work? So does that ever impact you? Do you ever feel challenged by that little voice in your head going, no, Olivia?
I mean, all the time. I'm human. I had a really weird day yesterday. So November 1 was the day of my book launch. And of course, I'm in isolation at the moment of all weeks. And I had a whole day where I was like, oh God, like what would I be doing today if I wasn't stuck indoors? And that was really frustrating because firstly, I would have been out doing, and this is the thing, I had no concrete plan specifically of what I would have done yesterday in Melbourne if I was in Melbourne. I'm in Brisbane isolating, but I know I would have done some crazy PR stunt yesterday that probably would have got picked up that had no prior thought because I literally would have woken up and something would have come to me. So I was sitting here yesterday and I was like, oh, how can I replicate something from isolation? Like, what is that going to be? And I sat there and all day and I was like, nothing's coming. Nothing is coming. It's like, and it's frustrating. And of course, when nothing comes, then the doubt like sinks in going, oh my God, like, are you going to be able to, you know, because I obviously have as big aspirations to get some amazing things done, not necessarily because of the book. I think it's, I like to impact other founders and help them along their journey that it's like, I need to get this book in the hands of so many people. How can I do that? And I start to lose faith in myself sometimes for moments when those ideas don't come. But truthfully, what do? I probably, like yesterday, I got to the point where I was like, just shut the laptop. Like, you can't force ideas. You cannot force them. If people don't have the belief, that's hard. I talk about in the book ways to get around that. And I think a big one is that, you know, it's a terrible kind of saying, but you kind of do have to fake it till you make it. Like you actually have to be brave, like, because even if it doesn't work, what's the worst that could happen? You tried it. Cool, it doesn't work. Like, you're no worse off. Like, you're actually no worse off. The only potential is upside because you could be so much better off. So it's, you do have to, there's a whole lot of stuff like inner work that I talk about. You really do need to go through that process of what are the blocks? Why are you struggling with self-belief? And honestly, it's something I go through all the time myself.
You mentioned there as well wanting to help women entrepreneurs. And do you think that it's more challenging for women in the entrepreneurial space still?
I do. And I think it's a number of reasons. I had a child when I was 19, so I've been a mum for a long time now. I think that there is something around, this is just my opinion on it, there is something around when you become a mum as well, and often a lot of business owners are either mums or they become mums as part of the journey. You are so used to doing stuff for others that when you then start your own business and you have to do everything for yourself and you essentially are in charge of creating your own dream life, it feels odd and it feels challenging because as mums, as women, I just think innately we are so used to putting others before ourselves. I think there's a change in that. I see a positive change. Like my daughter's 22 now and I just look at the way that she lives her life and the things that she's doing and I'm blown, like she is my inspiration. I'm blown away by this young human that's just like such an empowered woman. But for me, I'm 42 and I'm like, it's a work in progress. Like it's a daily mindset work in progress to have the same confidence or just to sometimes not even like, you know, it's not even about comparing women and men. It's just we are different. We're different beings and we have different brains and thought patterns. And but I think, again, it all comes down to it's what we tell ourselves. And it doesn't have to be that way. Like, and we are in control of the choices that we make and we can choose to think differently. We can choose to wake up in the morning saying, you know, today I'm going to have an amazing day and I'm going to call 10 people to try and book, you know, ABC deals, or I'm going to go and see 5 new clients and then just do it. Like, commit to yourself and then just do it, even how uncomfortable it might feel. It may not feel natural and you may not, but you can choose. You literally can choose to live your day however you tell yourself. And equally, you can choose to do nothing because you get so caught up on feeling lack of confidence, lack of self-belief, lack of, is this ever going to work? You know, I don't know. I just think nothing's easy. So you may as well take the hard road and challenge yourself.
Mm. Is that one of the reasons why you've decided to launch Self Made Academy as well?
Yeah, it's all about mindset. Like, it's, I mean, there's so many, I don't want to be another course online. I think there's some amazing courses online, but I also think there is an influx of courses and coaches and, gosh, everywhere on Instagram these days. That's not my intent. My intent is, I'm so passionate about, I guess, sharing with people the things that I do daily. Like, there's a section on there that's being built out at the moment that's, you know, just daily mind training. Like, we go to the gym to exercise our muscles. You need to do this stuff for your mind. Like, you have to create a mindset muscle for yourself where you, over time, it does build courage. Like, you do start to feel braver. You do start to have more self-belief. You do start to take more risks because you truly have learned how to back yourself, or you've learned that even if you do fail, you don't break. Like, you just pick yourself up and tomorrow's a new day.
How important was it for you to have, I don't know, peer support or support from your family when you've been on this journey?
Oh, amazing. Like, I have a whole chapter dedicated to an old boss from, you know, in my 20s that was in my life for about 8 years that honestly the whole time was all about mindset. He introduced me to the power of reading. Little things like, you know, this sounds really ridiculous, but things like keeping your car spotless, keeping your room tidy. It's like, well, what does that have to do with business? It's how you do one thing is how you do all things. So if you can have the discipline to keep your space clear, to keep it sorted, to keep it organized, to have, I don't know, kind of pride in your surroundings around you, like, your external is often a reflection of what's going on internally. So if your outside world, if you get in your car today, or if you go home tonight after work, irrespective of how busy we all are, these are just the daily disciplines that I really talk about as well a lot in the book, is if you can train yourself to get disciplined with doing the thing. It's so easy sometimes to just be like, oh, I'm tired, I'll leave the dishes till I get home from work. No, if you actually just take that 1 minute to get the dishes done before you go to work, when you come home, your space is clear, you can relax. Like, but then that flows on into how you do business, because you'll get to work, you'll have a to-do list, and you'll be more likely to have the discipline to actually get through a few of the, like, it's so fascinating to me. But that was one of the biggest things that he instilled in me over many years, was like, just the whole notion of like daily discipline. And if you do the small things well, the big things will take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. What's a typical day for you?
There's a few daily disciplines. I usually walk along the beach, so I'm a big advocate as well for, you know, balance. So I'll usually start with a nature walk or a walk. Like this morning, 6:30, I was out walking the dog with no one around. And then I will normally start, I'm a big to-do list person, so I will start with the top 10 things that I have to do every day. But my tip there would be for anyone listening, even starting with one, like, what's that one thing that you know you need to do today that you haven't done? Like, there's a great book, Eat That Frog, right? The hardest thing that you need to do, is it that you need to call someone that owes you money? Is it that you need to book, a client? Like, whatever that one, if you could just do one thing every day, just one thing, what would that be? And make sure you do it. I try and do 10 every day. And then for me, it would be, you know, we use Basecamp, which is like a Slack tool. So checking in with the team, making sure that everybody's set up for the day. I definitely don't micromanage, so my team have a lot of autonomy, but I do like to check in. And then for me, I like to leave a lot of space in the day for, I mean, the thing that lights me up the most, we've talked about it a lot on this conversation, is that creative thinking. I'm most lit up by doing things every day that I think will make impact for the person receiving it, impact for the business, impact for small business people. So, you know, I will leave space in the day for that. I'm not a big meeting person, you know, coming from corporate. I just think there's so much time wasted on meetings and not enough action. So I spend most of my day actually doing things. And then I used to, up until a couple of weeks ago, I used to pick my son up every day from school. He's in year 11, but he's now wanting to catch the train. So that's the first time I've stopped that in a long time. And then I will listen to a podcast. I have therapy every Friday. So depending on the day, I have therapy. That's a non-negotiable. I think that can be some of the best business coaching, even though it's, you know, a therapist is not really a business coach. That comes back to what I talk about. It's all about mindset. So if I'm going through challenging times at work, whether it's, I don't know, it could be anything to do with like the economy or just things that I'm facing, often I'll find that when I go into my therapy, it's usually we're talking about those self-limiting beliefs and where that stems from and what, you know, old thought patterns I might be experiencing, past trauma. I'm a huge advocate for therapy. But yeah, my day is usually somewhere in the day I'll try and do a random act of kindness of some sort, literally every day. Those that know me personally, they see it daily. And that can be, I don't know, morning walking past someone, purchasing someone a coffee, paying it forward in some way. To me, I think purpose is huge. Purpose is why I do what I do. I mean, my day is, I would say it flows. It's not, I rarely have a stressful day. You know, we're coming into Black Friday month and I don't feel stressed. I'm locked up at the moment. I feel relatively calm. I feel agitated that I can't get out and do things. But I think flow would be important. I think you can't, I don't subscribe to hustle culture anymore. It's something that I've experienced too many times in my life, you know, the working 17 hours a day on your laptop till 2 a.m, up at 7, just that burnout. Like I now have mental health because I've burnt out twice and I just do not subscribe to any of that. I think it's toxic. I think it's damaging for our health. So I'm probably more on the other side now where I have a lot of space in my day for things that just come up. Like I make space for things that come up.
Mm. So what advice then would you have for small business owners who actually usually are notoriously lacking in time for themselves and often have very poor mental health outcomes? Like, how can you encourage them to take better care of themselves and address those mental health challenges that go with running a business?
I'm just grabbing my book because in the very back of the book, there is something that I put in here that I don't think enough people know about. So I would suggest anyone listening to this that is struggling a little bit at the moment, feeling burnt out in any way, there is an amazing initiative that's provided by Beyond Blue and it's called New Access Mental Health Coaching and it's free. And it's open to any business owner with fewer than 20 employees. And from memory, you get about 6 free sessions of mental health / business coaching support from someone through the Beyond Blue network. I try and tell as many people about that as possible because one thing I will say is that therapy can be really expensive in Australia. I think that's a good place to start or at least explore because what you'll learn through that process is that a big part of managing mental health as a small business owner is, you know, making sure you don't get burnt out. I will say from my own experience that when I was working, grinding, doing the 17 hours days for 4.5 years, our business surprisingly wasn't making profit. Our revenue was large and we were not making profit. And when I got burnt out and had to step away from the business and slow down in 2017, it was around the time when I took a different approach to working that we actually started making profit. So I think the reason that is because when you take a more strategic approach to how your day goes and you focus on things that will make impact, because what I found to be true for myself in the early years is it's so easy to do a lot and to keep yourself busy and to be doing a lot of things, but often they're the wrong things. You're just filling your day up with the wrong things. Like I said before, if you could find one thing every single day that could truly impact and help to grow your business, which will take a lot of courage because there'll be big things that you need to do, you can work a lot less and actually make a bigger financial impact and a better mental health impact on your own life.
So the book Self-Made, what would you say would be perhaps the most valuable piece of advice that business owners would get from reading the book?
Definitely taking action, daily action. Like, we can all sit here, we all have goals, we all, like, I want to achieve things, but at the end of the day, if you're not really prepared to back that up with action, like truly committing to taking action every single day, the chances are it's probably not going to happen. You know, I think I put a quote in there, something about dreams without action are just wishes. And it sounds so simple, but I mean, I've mentored, gosh, close to probably, I don't know, over 100 women since 2019. And I think the fundamental pattern that I see coming through is that we all say we want things, but to actually back that up with really going for it, that's the disconnect. And I think the book will help you. The book will actually help you work out what you need to do yourself to be able to take the daily action.
What do you think was the thing that really spurred you into action?
14 years of financial hardship. Yeah. I think if you've been in a dark place, if you've really faced adversity in life, I think some of the best people, some of the best business owners, some of the best brands, some of the best founders have all faced some sort of adversity. And I think once you've hit rock bottom, one, in some weird way, you're not totally terrified of it happening again, but you remember it well enough to know that you know what not to do to end there again, if that makes sense. But also, I don't know, it sounds so simple, but literally just doing something every, like, it's the momentum. It's just creating momentum. If you're stuck, you're stuck because you're not moving. So just move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep going.
Yeah. It sounds terrible. Like, it sounds so simplistic. But actually, when you put it into action, like, that's when you'll start to see results. Like, you know, I've helped so many women with their personal finances, you know, building their own, like, you know, wealth creation. Women that, like, even my mum, who's 70, who just doesn't come from a time where women were encouraged to save, just even that, fundamentally teaching them, if you just do this one thing every day, over time, watch what happens. And sure enough, the amount of women are like, I cannot believe it. This is the first time in my life where I've, you know, paid off my credit card, where I can cut my credit card up, where I've been able to take a holiday. Like, it's just, and nothing changed. These women didn't get more money in their bank account. They just changed the way they were doing things. Yeah.
Little steps, incremental. Just keep going. I think that's probably just about all we've got time for. Where can we get the book?
So the book is in most, I had some friends reach out yesterday in Melbourne, and it's been in every bookstore that they've been to so far. So I'm assuming it's in most bookstores Australia-wide. It's in all the airports. It's on Amazon, Booktopia. You can get it from my website, oliviacart.com.au. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Olivia. It's been great having you on the show today.
Amazing. Thank you so much, and have a beautiful afternoon.
You too.